It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. NFC Championship game style. We told you, the divisional round was going to be awesome. It absolutely was. Hopefully a lot of you got a chance to play in a daily league like at DraftKings.com. Evan and I were talking, and we thought it made a lot of sense to have one of the true experts come on and give us a little something-something about the different games that you can play. It just occurred to me that we've been talking so much about this, but not really explaining the different games that are there. He is Evan Silva, the master of all he oversees at RotoWorld.com. Already, by the way, has a list of free agents up at RotoWorld.com. The dude's not, he does not mess around. It's January 13th. Already a list of free agents up, RotoWorld.com. Total workhorse, at Evan Silva on Twitter. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. I played pro football for a while. It was awesome. Now I'm really getting into fantasy, including this daily fantasy stuff at DraftKings. Thoroughly enjoying it. RossTucker.com, always going to be the hub for this podcast. And you can get it at iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere podcasts are, you can find the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. But just know that the link is at RossTucker.com. Any feed, whatever, is at RossTucker.com. That's also the best way to support the podcast. If you like what we're doing, you can easily go ahead and click on the Amazon banner ads and buy something if you need something for your house or something for the new year, or just frequent one of our sponsors like Stamps.com or DraftKings. We really appreciate when you go there, put those codes in. That's what keeps these things kicking. So without further ado, very excited about our guest today.
Next meal.
Very, very excited to kick off today's show in a major way. Back by popular demand, Alvin Smidenfeld, a.k.a. Al Smizzle. And I just found out recently, any combination of Al or Alvin on the front end and Smidenfeld or Smizzles or Smiz or whatever on the back end works. So he's got a very flexible name. You know him, though, as the guy that won $350,000 in one day at DraftKings.com and was five rushing yards away from winning the million. Al, good to have you back on the show. You can follow him on Twitter like we do, at Al Zeidenfeld, Zeidenfeld. And here's why we have you on, Al. As you know, daily is just going through the roof right now, more and more popular. I've been playing here in the postseason and really enjoying it. But it occurred to me that Evan and I have been talking the last couple weeks about, yeah, if you're in daily, but not all daily leagues are created equal. And there's different types of daily leagues when you go to DraftKings that you can sign up for. And your strategy, depending on what league you're in, should be very different. Now, I know some of our listeners already know that, but as we did this thing starting way back in June, it's very, very, very important to have an intimate understanding of the rules and whatever your redraft league is or whatever you're playing. So can you just break down for us, Al, the difference between the different games? I know people break it down to cash games versus tournaments or 50-50s versus GPPs, but just give us an overview, because so often we've been talking about, well, you should go with this guy because nobody else is going to get him in a daily league, and that's your best chance to actually win it. But if you're in a cash game, that's not necessarily the case, right?
Yeah, I mean, the main difference, or let's just start with the terminology. People use cash games or GPPs. GPP stands for guaranteed prize pool, you know, a tournament where they post this major prize pool. DraftKings had $1 million for first. It was usually like a 2.2 or a $3.1 million in the entire prize pool. And those generally will pay out somewhere between 15 and 20% of the entire entrants will make the money. Now, that's a GPP. A cash game is something that I personally categorize as something that pays out 33% or more. So a triple up or a double up, a 50-50 will pay 50% of the field. Head-to-head game, obviously, it's you against me. If I win, 50% of the field gets paid. Those are cash games. And the way that you want to construct your lineup for a cash game varies slightly from the way you want to create your lineup for a GPP. In a cash game, you want high-floor players. For football, you want guys that are going to get a ton of targets, a ton of carries, a ton of touches every game. Quarterbacks are going to have a lot of attempts. A guy like Russell Wilson was a great cash game quarterback because he had a very high floor based on the fact that he was going to rush for 50 yards. Now, a cash game play can also work in a tournament because they obviously have access to a high ceiling game. You know, a high floor guy doesn't necessarily mean that he can't have a 200-yard day with three touchdowns. It just means that they have a higher floor than the other guy. Now, a high ceiling guy, you're looking for guys like, let's say, Terrence Williams the last couple of weeks, who had a couple touchdowns last week for the Cowboys. He would be the epitome of a guy who has a high ceiling but a very low floor. You know, he can have one catch for 20 yards, or he can have five catches for 120 and two touchdowns. Those are more plays that we look for in GPPs, in tournaments, because you want as many guys who have access to a high ceiling as possible. And what you were mentioning was people that nobody else is going to be on. Players going to have a low percent owned number next to their name. Now, you don't necessarily – nobody's ever won a tournament because they have the lowest total of the percentage owned. You know, you win it by having more points than everybody else. But there's a philosophy behind fading highly owned players, especially in a sport like football, because it's so touchdown-driven. It's so event-dependent that if everybody – if 50% of the field is on this one guy, and let's say he leaves the field, you know, concussion protocol, he gets hurt, fumbles a couple of times and gets benched. All of a sudden, 50% of the field that has that guy is falling way behind, and you have a leg up on them because you faded that one player. The other side of the coin, however, is if the very popular player goes nuts, that 50% of the field that's on him leaves everyone else behind. So it's a dangerous game that you have to play.
So is it fair or unfair, Al, for me to say that a GPP is for people that are willing to take on more risk for a greater reward, and the cash game, the 50-50, you characterize, or anything where 33% is getting a payout or more, that a cash game is more for someone that's a little bit more conservative and maybe more interested in just kind of adding a little entertainment value to their football watching?
That's a very easy way to look at it, yeah, for sure. Obviously, in a GPP, you have to take more risks because the prize pool is so top-heavy. You know, in the DraftKings tournament, it was $1 million to first, second place, $100,000, third place, set of steak knives. You know, so all the money's up top. You really got to go to be the number one guy on the sheet, and there's 92,000 other teams in that tournament. So what are you going to do to make sure that you have the perfect lineup that differentiates just a little bit from some other people in that tournament as well, so that you can end up all the way up top? You know, and it doesn't mean that you have to fade every player that's going to be 30% or more owned. You know, you can have one, you can have two. Sometimes the chalk wins. But every once in a while, you have to do something to differentiate in that winning lineup. You're going to find one spot like Two Gun, who just won $1 million this week. He had a huge month. He won $700,000 a couple weeks ago. In week 17, I believe he had Eric Decker, who was about 2% owned. Now, he argued that the reason he rostered him was because Percy Harvin was out. Decker was going to see a larger percent of the targets. People tended to stay away because Geno Smith has not been a great fantasy quarterback this year, and he reaped all the benefits from that. So it is more risk with a much higher reward. And the cash games, you only have to finish in the top 50%. It doesn't matter if you finish number one in a 100-person field that's a 50-50 or you finish 50th. They all get paid the same. Way different philosophy in a GPP.
Wow, that's really interesting. Now, what do you play more?
I get a good base of cash games in my play every single day. I play football, I play basketball, I play baseball. So I try to keep like a 3-to-1 ratio between my cash games and my GPP spend. So if I'm going to spend, you know, for every $10 I spend, I want about $7 of that in cash games and $3 of that, in GPPs if I'm going to be extremely aggressive on that day.
How did you come to that ratio?
Well, if I, like I said, if you have a top 50 percentile lineup on the day, you're still going to make money on that day. But if you have a top 20% lineup, you're going to make a lot of money. It kind of helps you get through the slow days, you know, when you don't have the best lineup in the world. You know, you play your head-to-heads and you can beat people that have 20, 30, 40 percentile lineups, and it keeps you afloat until you get one of those really big days where one or two of your lineups, if you're making multiple lineups and GPPs, really hits, and your cash game lineups just keep you afloat throughout the time, and you keep ticking upward, kind of like if you look at a chart of the stock market, there's going to be ebbs and flows. It's going to come down. You're going to hit slow streaks just like any athlete hits a slow streak as well. But over time, you're just going to trend upward. So you have to look at it like a really long game instead of just taking one shot all in with everything that you have in your bankroll and saying, well, here it is this week. You want to look at it over time.
Is there – last question I have for you, at least for right now, then I'm going to hand it over to Evan. But is a lot of people – so many people play daily all year, I know that, at DraftKings. But especially now in the playoffs. But, like, I'm looking at – DraftKings right now and Gronkowski 7,800 and, you know, just different players, right? There's only two games this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only four teams. Is it fair to say that as the playoffs move on, there's less teams, less players, less variants that you have a lower chance to win? Because it feels like there's not as many players to choose from. And my guess or my sense is there's a lot more people like me that are choosing to give this thing a shot in the playoffs.
You know, there's going to be a lot more overlap in the playoffs, and there's going to be a lot less places for a sharp player to differentiate themselves from anybody else that's in the tournament and in cash games. I mean, the margin of error in a 50-50 is so slim right now because, as you said, there's only two games, there's only four teams, and you have to fit your entire roster under a salary cap. It's not a pick'em game where you can just say, well, I want this eight guys, and you just get any eight that you want. You have to still fit them under a salary cap. So everybody's going to be looking towards the same value plays. Everybody's going to be looking towards the same stud plays. You know, it's definitely a tougher week to play the shorter the slate in the NFL.
Evan, you got anything, or did I take all your questions?
So how if you were forced to play, or if you really wanted to play this slate with only two, with only two games and four teams to select from, how would you attack it with your lineup construction, Al? And how would you attack it from a GPP versus cash game decision? You know, I mean, how would you go about approaching this kind of a slate? And really the, you know, the same deal with the last. With the last 2 weeks, but it's even smaller now.
Well, the smaller the slate, I tend to try and get the more stud plays that I can get into my lineup. You know, there's less opportunities for balance. You know, on a 15 or 16 game NFL slate, you're looking to, you know, you can go with balance. You can go with a bunch of average price players because you can find value and you can find great matchups based, you know, you guys do a great job on this podcast of targeting who the value plays are going to be. Evan does a great job in his article as well. So you can find those values. You can't find them on a two-game slate. So you almost really have to play the stud players and find value where you can, especially in cash games. In tournaments, let's say we're making three lineups for DraftKings, I'd probably put my cash game in one of them. I would go with a slightly different lineup for my second one, where I would tweak one or two players, maybe a 3-for-3 switch from my main cash game lineup. And then I would look at, okay, here's my top one or two players at each position. I would completely cross them off the list and try and build a lineup with the rest of my list.
Al, I really appreciate the time and learning from you. I got to tell you, though, this might be the last time because you actually make me feel dumber when I hear you talk.
That's not possible.
No, I got to be honest with you, though, because I've been trying it this weekend. How many dudes out there are like you because they got a better chance to win than I do? I mean, you guys had this whole thing gamed and figured out. I thought I'd give it a try putting the code in, you know, Feast and getting all excited about it. And, man, I mean, how many dudes like you are out there?
There's a lot of people, and football is probably the average player in daily fantasy football is more knowledgeable than the average player in just about any other daily sport. There's so much football information out there, there's so much good information out there, that people are way more educated about fantasy football than, let's say, basketball or baseball. You know, you have to really grind at those daily sports, where the week-to-week of football makes it easier for the average player to jump in. You've seen a lot of players that were new to DraftKings just jump in and win a huge tournament, have a really big payday. And the most recent numbers were that of all the 30, 40 million people that play fantasy sports in America, 5% of those play daily. So there's a lot of room for growth, and there's a lot of superstars in DFS that we don't even know yet because they haven't started playing.
Wow. That is really, really cool. So you think it's easier to win in the other sports? You play the other sports?
The other sports are more of a grind. So NBA and baseball and, you know, even hockey. I don't play hockey except for the first month of the season before NBA starts. There is definitely a bigger edge for the sharp player because the information is tougher to get on a day-to-day basis.
Al, you are the man. Really appreciate the time. Everybody needs to be following this dude on Twitter, at Al Zeidenfeld, AlZeidenfeld. Al, you're the man. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That dude was amazing. Almost as amazing as DraftKings.com, the place where he dominates. Now is your time to give it a shot. It's America's favorite one-week fantasy sports site. You can win enormous cash prizes every single time you play. We told you about Al. He made $350,000 in a day. But even these cash games, these 50-50, there's a lot of people that can win money. So you get a chance to play, have some fun, have some extra interest watching the games on Sunday, but also maybe win some money out of it. That continues through the playoffs at DraftKings.com. Plus, as you heard there from Al, you can do other sports as well. If you're into that, head over to DraftKings.com now and use our promo code FEAST to play for free in the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter FEAST for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
Next meal.
All right, guys, only one game to talk about this week. It's the NFC Championship game, Green Bay at Seattle, 3:05 on Sunday.
How about it? We got two podcasts, as I mentioned at the start. We're going to start with the first one, the NFC Championship game. Evan, it's interesting. By the way, I'm still kind of blown away by that, by your dude Al Smizzles right there. That, I mean, these daily dudes are into it.
Yeah, you can learn a lot from them, man. I mean, and they're really cool about, like, being willing to distribute their advice, because which interests me, the whole idea behind. I mean, they are professionals. They do this for a living. I mean, a lot of them quit their jobs and they just, you know, they do the daily grind all year round as a full-time job, which interests me that they're still willing to give out their advice and they're competing against you. But they're great people. They understand that you're going to get stuff wrong, you know, sometimes, because they live it every single day. I mean, they get stuff wrong every single day. And they're really, really knowledgeable about sports. I mean, Al Smith, just listening to his advice last year for maybe like a 2-month period playing NBA, which I know nothing about. I had 16 caches in tournaments last year over like a 2-month period, just going off the things that he was saying in NBA. I like look up to those guys. I mean, they're, you know, maybe the best fantasy players in the entire world.
Really, really impressive stuff. Let's break down this game. We'll hit the AFC game in the other Fantasy Feast edition. Also going to get to, by the way, a cool email in the other Fantasy Feast. As for this game, it's interesting. Rematch of week one, where, and I think the real key to this game from my standpoint for both fantasy and in real life is the Packer offensive line, especially with Aaron Rodgers being hobbled. how well can they protect him? And I thought, if you go back to that week one game, I thought they actually did a pretty decent job until Bulaga went down. Derek Sherrod came in. The Seahawks smelled blood in the water. Averill got Aaron Rodgers. Then Michael Bennett beat him, you know, beat Sherrod for a safety. And then the game was kind of started to get out of hand after that. But to me, that's the focal point. It is interesting, though, for people that want to play daily this week, these are the two, you know, most expensive running backs. You look at DraftKings, Marshawn Lynch, 7,600. Eddie Lacy, 6,300.
Yeah, and this is also the game with the lower over-under, 47-point total. The other one has 54 points. You know, I hate betting on guys when they're facing Seattle, you know, offensive players in every situation. I'm always looking to avoid that. Some people who did go contrarian last week and started Kelvin Benjamin really benefited from that in the box score. They also got good luck because Byron Maxwell got injured. I would expect Maxwell to be back. Or I'm sorry, he got sick or something, right? He had pneumonia.
Yeah, he has pneumonia. And he had the issue before and couldn't catch his breath.
Yeah, right.
And Eddie Lacy had an asthma attack. How about that, by the way? I mean, divisional round, and you got one guy with pneumonia, one guy with an asthma attack. I mean, it's just weird.
It is weird. I think that the best way for the Packers to move the ball in this game will be kind of how they did it in the first one, and that'll be just with a lot of chain-moving receptions. Randall Cobb, you know, his quickness is tough for Seattle's big cornerbacks to cover. Jordy Nelson did have 9 catches in that week one game. You know, none of the Packers receivers averaged more than 10 yards per reception in that game, though. And I don't like the odds of wide receivers ever getting open against the Seahawks cornerbacks. And, maybe something good, you know, they'll catch a break like Byron Maxwell leaving the game or something like that. But I like Randall Cobb, and I really don't like anybody else in the Packers offense.
So looking at DraftKings, Randall Cobb's the most expensive receiver at 7,700. Then you got Jordy at 7,600, and Edelman, T.Y. Hilton, Brandon LaFell, Doug Baldwin, Danny Amendola, and then you get to Davante Adams. To me, and I know, you know, it might have just been one game, but at 4,300, I guess my concern with Davante Adams would be if it's in a GPP, a lot of people will probably think that he's value and will take him. But for him to be, you know, this weekend, what is he, like the 8th most expensive receiver? That seems like pretty decent value.
Yeah, more people will be on him because one factor that you always have to consider, and this will be true for Danny Amendola, who we'll talk about on the next podcast too, is that people get very caught up in recency bias and what has happened lately. And Davante Adams is coming off a big game, and it looks like his role has grown, and you know, maybe the same for Danny Amendola. But so more people than usual will definitely be on him. That doesn't make him a bad play. You know, I would expect him to see something like 4 to 8 targets. I probably won't use him just because, I mean, I know he's coming off a good game, but I just don't like his chances against Richard Sherman and Maxwell.
Yeah, we'll talk about this, you know, on the AFC podcast, but it's interesting. You look at even below Davante Adams, below Jermaine Kearse, you see Dante Moncrief, Hakeem Nicks, Reggie Wayne. You know, it'd just be so helpful if these teams could just tell us who's the guy they're going to throw the ball to a lot, you know? It's just such a shame they don't do that.
We should also talk about, because some people still think that Richard Sherman follows the number one wide receiver. That's not how it works. He plays left cornerback. Byron Maxwell plays predominantly right cornerback. He actually has been used in the slot a little bit. But for the most part recently, he's been their right cornerback, and then their slot corner is Jeremy Lane. So Randall Cobb really, as a slot receiver, has the best. Those guys don't move around either. You know, they're stationary cornerbacks. Randall Cobb really has the best matchup and is the guy that I would look at. Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams, ordinarily they flip-flop sides. So if you're really trying to avoid Sherman, you know, Jordy will get chances against Maxwell, but you know, I think you could almost argue that Byron Maxwell, when at 100% or close to it, is almost as good as Richard Sherman, I think.
Luke Wilson is the third most expensive tight end this week at $4,000. Andrew Corliss is the fifth at $2,600. Luke Wilson's been making some big plays lately.
Yeah, he has, and Corliss scored a TD last week. I mean, he can catch red zone TDs, and at that price, if he catches another red zone TD, he will pay off for you for sure. On Seattle's side, one guy who I think is kind of interesting with Paul Richardson out of the mix, the third receiver for Seattle, Kevin Norwood, another rookie. He's got some decent size at Alabama, showed some ability to win jump balls. He should play in the range of 60 to 70% of the Seahawks offensive snaps, and he is going to be minimum price. So he's a guy to look at. Maybe people won't be on him at all, and he should have some opportunities. And I mean, this is a pretty solid matchup for the Seahawks receivers. I mean, I don't think that any of the defensive backs really for Green Bay are, you know, they're not like Richard Sherman or Byron Maxwell. So Doug Baldwin, I think, is very much in play. Jermaine Kearse, you know, he had a big week last week. And then Kevin Norwood would be a decent sleeper based on cost.
What about the running backs? We got to touch on them. I mentioned that they're the two most expensive this weekend, and for good reason when you look at the Colts and the Patriots and the uncertainty there. But, you know, Marshawn at 7,600, Eddie Lacy at 6,300, so $1,300 less than Marshawn. Do you see any value with either one of those guys?
Marshawn could be kind of a value because, you know, for the same reasons that I explained before, recency bias. He may have burned people last week. I mean, I know he burned me. I had him in pretty much every lineup that I played. And you know, the Seahawks won that game by throwing the football. And in the week one game, Marshawn went off. This is another home game where he has had so much success in a huge sample size. I know that he's coming off a slower game by his standards, but I really like Marshawn to bounce back in this spot. And Eddie Lacy, you know, love him, man, but I don't like any running backs ever against Seattle, ever.
What about quarterback? Got to touch on quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is the fourth most expensive quarterback on DraftKings. Brady's at 8,500, Luck 8,200, Russell Wilson 8,000, Aaron Rodgers 7,800. It's just like, I mean, I know his calf's bothering him, and I know these are four really good quarterbacks, but it, like, I had to check twice, Evan, to see if that was real, that Aaron Rodgers is the least expensive quarterback out of these starters.
Yeah, that's interesting. I still, you know, I balk at using fantasy players against the Seahawks pretty much without fail. So I think that, but a lot of people think that way, though. So there may be some value in Aaron Rodgers because his price is down and because people will probably be on Russell Wilson or Tom Brady or Andrew Luck this week. So he may be a bit contrarian. I mean, he may be relatively low owned, you know, for Aaron Rodgers.
What about Russell Wilson?
I mean, what do you think about Russell Wilson? I think that he's maybe the best quarterback play of the weekend in fantasy. I also think that he will be really high owned because I think that a lot of people will think that way. What do you think?
I think you're probably right. He made some awesome throws the other night. He really did. And even like the bootlegs when he's lobbing the ball over Charles Johnson. I mean, he's just really, really impressive. And I don't think Green Bay's defense, they're not bad, but I wouldn't be afraid of them to go against them. But it's interesting. I think kind of like what Al was saying, he's a good guy for a cash game with the high floor this week. Yep. But I don't know if he's what you want in a GPP, because I think a lot of people might go that way. But it's really interesting. This daily stuff is interesting. Good breakdown, really, of every – that's pretty cool that we're to the point where you can do a breakdown of every skill position player in the NFC Championship game. We will do the same on the AFC Championship game Fantasy Feast, which we'll be posting tomorrow. Hope you guys enjoyed getting that knowledge dropped from Al Smizzle at Al Zeidenfeld. You know DraftKings is where it's at, hitting up the feast. We'll be back with the AFC podcast tomorrow. Hope you're stuffed.
Thanks for downloading the Fantasy Feast Eaton podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the Russ Tucker Football Podcast and the Even Money Podcast as well, all of which are available at RussTucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
When you're ready to buy a car, TrueCar is changing car buying forever. Yes, TrueCar helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Everyday TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings, and TrueCar users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, download the TrueCar mobile app or go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car you want. Then, register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. With TrueCar, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the TrueCar mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today.